Welcome to the 2013 ASCII Pod Life on Life's Terms panel. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Steve! We love you, Steve! Lots and lots and lots!
Thank you. Please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always to maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. Thus, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker or AA member be identified by full name in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other problem drinkers who may wish to share our recovery program with us, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. The long form of AA's 11 tradition says our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. In keeping with this principle, please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable AA members on websites accessible to the public, including unrestricted pages on social networking sites. I would now like to introduce our panel members. We have Josh from Colorado. We have Kevin from Prescott. And we have Maya from Phoenix. And they're going to be sharing on Life on Life's Terms. And, you know, I'll give it up to Kevin for a speaker on the panel.
Please help me welcome Kevin.
My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin! We love you, Kevin! Lots and lots and lots!
Love you guys, too. Well, I want to thank the committee and ASCII PAW for asking me to speak at this. It's been a real honor to be able to come down here from Prescott, AZ, my new hometown. And be a part of this. So, I guess to start, my sobriety date is December the 25th, 2003. I also never had a legal drink, which is going on next door. Some of my friends are competing with me to speak at this, but that's okay. Where to start? You know, life on life's terms. When I first heard that, it may be like many people with reading the acceptance page. I think I was in treatment somewhere and they had me read that every night for 30 days to gain acceptance or this or that and the other. And it talks about in there, unless I could accept life completely on life's terms, you know, then it would be very difficult for me to stay sober. And that really has been my journey in my sobriety. I guess to go back kind of to where it all began, you know, as far back as I can remember, I always judged my insides against other people's outsides. You know, even though I was outgoing as a kid and athletic and I had a lot of things going for me, I always seemed to be addicted to more, you know. Before I found drugs and alcohol, you know, the grass was always greener no matter where I went, and it was very, very difficult for me to find acceptance of my situation. I had a pretty decent family life and nothing major, really bad ever happened to me. But still I had this, you know, internal, debate going on all the time as far as, you know, what's wrong with me? And it seemed that everybody else just had it figured out and I never did. You know, I was able to kind of always adapt to my situation, but acceptance, sure wasn't, sure wasn't a part of my vocabulary or my experience at that time. So, you know, everyone may not relate to this, but, you know, alcohol and drugs were my solution. They weren't my problem. And, at least not for a long time. And, you know, alcohol gave me the illusion that I had power and control over things in my life that I just didn't have power and control over. But for, you know, an alcoholic like me, perception is reality. You know, in my mind, I really believed that I could change the way that people thought about me. I could change my external circumstances. And if I just got better at changing my external circumstances, that it would ultimately change the way I felt inside. And like I said, that worked for a very, very long time. Well, I guess for a couple of years, you know, I started getting loaded at a young age. And it really did work. And had it continued to work, I probably never would have gotten sober, never been interested in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Or any of those things, but unfortunately, my solution to my ism quit working. You know, I have a disease that is a relationship destroying and perception twisting. You know, I have a difficult time living life on life's terms. You know, I have these emotions that I don't know how to deal with, and I find a solution for it. If I can't find a solution in this 12-step program, then I'll find one somewhere else. And I've tried many avenues to try to fix my insides by changing my external circumstances. And it works very, very temporarily. And then I just feel worse, and my situation becomes more and more intolerable, as it's described in the book. So you know, like I said, I went on getting loaded, and it worked for a while. But it hit a point where that was no longer, you know, a solution that was going to work for me. And we hit that point where we can no longer picture life with or without alcohol and drugs. And that's a pretty scary place to be for those of us that have been there. Probably if you're sitting in this room, you've been in that position. So, you know, I knew that alcohol was no longer a solution for me. It was killing me, but I didn't know what else to do. You know, people talk about like, get sober. It's so awesome. No, it's not. Okay. It sucked because anytime I wasn't loaded, man, my mind would spin out of control. I walked around like I was crazy. I didn't know how to have conversations with, hi, Kevin. It was a nightmare all the time, you know, constantly trying to change my external circumstances so I could feel more comfortable in here because I didn't have another solution. You see, just stopping drinking alcohol for me has no long-term effect on my life other than to make it so miserable that the only thing I want to do is drink or drug again. You know, I have to find some sort of solution to replace what I did before. And that's where, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the treatment center that I got sober in. And so, you know, so life on life's terms, you know, it was one of those things that when you call your sponsor and he says life on life's terms, you just want to like reach your phone and like punch him right in his face. It's very similar to like, let go and let God. Those are great sayings, and I need to hear them every time I get it on the other end of the line, whether it's from another alcoholic or a friend or a sponsor, whatever it is. But, like, what does that really mean? You know, I was joking with a friend of mine before this. She was like, what are you going to say in your panel? You could just go up there and say, life on life's terms. And that's how it was. Thank you. I'll be back. You know, what do you say about it? And I think that life on life's terms normally has a very negative connotation that comes along with it. You know, anytime I'm going through something really rough, and I'm being really dramatic about it, and I'm calling my sponsor all the time. And that's important, don't get me wrong. But I'm a self-centered alcoholic, and when things go on in my life, it is like everybody needs to know. You know, and it's huge, and I'm like, oh my God, you don't believe what happened to me. And it has this negative connotation that I really need to accept life on life's terms. But life on life's terms has a lot of benefits too. You know, for me, I got an opportunity at sobriety at 17 years old that some people don't get their entire life. And those are the things that I try to think about today. And that's really what I wanted to, you know, make sure I threw in there. That life on life's terms, there's a lot to be grateful for. You know, if you're sitting in this room today, life on life's terms has given you an opportunity that literally there are people that go their entire lives and don't get an opportunity to have the clarity of mind that some of you are sitting in here with today. Maybe you're new and maybe it's coming to you. Maybe you've been here a little while and you've been working a program and your lights are starting to turn on and things like that. But the glimpse that you have today and the experience that you're going to get this weekend here at ASCIPA is something that some people go their entire lives and they never, ever get the opportunity to do. So if you've got boy drama or you got lots of feelings or you just don't know if you can hang on another day for sobriety, I'm not saying that that's not important, but to take a minute sometimes to help me go like, I felt a little bit of gratitude. Life on life's terms has brought us to this point where we all get to sit here safe and sane and sober today and get a shot at this deal one day at a time because not everybody gets that. So like I said, I sobered up at 17. I did not necessarily sober up in Alcoholics Anonymous. My story's a little bit different I sobered up in a treatment center for young people back east, and it's a little different. It was 12-step based, but really what kept me sober from my first year of sobriety was the fellowship. And I'm not saying that the fellowship isn't important, but it's not the entirety of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it's my story. You know, I'm very, very grateful for my experience there. It's just not necessarily what I do today in order to stay sober. So, you know, I met this sponsor, and he was this really enthusiastic guy, and he loved recovery, and he was really outgoing and big personality. Of course, I was very attracted to that as a sponsor, because that's how I've always rolled my whole life. And, Brandon was such an instrumental part of my recovery. I think, you know, cause I wasn't going to touch a big book at 17 years old. I just didn't care. I mean, it was like work the step, like it's not going to happen. You know, I wanted to like run around and dance and like, you know, go to stuff like this and like chase girls and stuff like that. Cause that's what I wanted to do at 17. Yeah. So, I think Brandon knew, that wasn't going to be the case. So, you know, without really knowing what I was doing, I started to work the principles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous without really knowing what I was doing. You know, we would sit and talk every night. He would get me to start praying and, you know, taught me about reaching out and how important. I mean, I didn't know that the steps like fit together and there was like a design for living and all this other great stuff, you know, but they say more will be revealed, but it was what I needed at the time. And God put Brandon in my life, I think, for that reason. And I got a glimpse and I fell in love with recovery, you know, for my first year. And so I get to be about a year sober and I'm starting to learn more and maybe I'm getting a little dry or, whatever it is, but I'm on fire and I'm starting to sponsor guys and loving life. And I, like I said, I hadn't really worked a step formally. But then again, like, you know, people work this program before there ever was a big book too. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's my experience. So, but it hit a point where, I started to kind of realize that what my sponsor was doing wasn't lasting long term for his recovery. But I was, you know, what do you say? It's your sponsor. It's this guy you look up to. And then he had his sponsor and it was like this hierarchy. I'm sure some of you are familiar with that. My sponsor got loaded. His sponsor got loaded in a matter of 2 months or something. These two guys that I really looked up to. And it shook my whole life up. I mean, I was devastated. You know, as much as I knew logically, like, okay, like the fellowship of the program isn't enough to create long-lasting sobriety for an alcoholic like me. For some people, you can come in and that's great and you can just stay being big man on campus and Alcoholics Anonymous. But for me, it's not enough. And it shook me up. It devastated me. And I didn't know where to turn. You know, all this trust that I had built in these two guys, was instantly wiped away. And I found myself totally, totally shaken up. And God put the right people, places, and things in my life in order for me to walk through that. Thank you. It wasn't that. So, the competing with next door here. So I met another sponsor, and he introduced me really to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and going through the big book and things like that. And I walked through that situation with dignity and grace. See, when I got sober, I would see these old-timers, and I still today, see people where, you know, talk about living in faith, and you see these people where, like, I thought faith was this thing that you just got, you know, and you just, like, learn how to just walk through things seamlessly. Like, when life would happen or these devastating situations would happen, you just naturally, intuitively knew what to do. You slapped a smile on your face and you were just so grateful for the opportunity to walk through it. That is not my experience. Faith is an action and trust is an action. And a lot of times, as I walk through things in my recovery, it's being willing to suit up and show up is the most faith as I can muster sometimes. And it was a real humbling experience for me to remember that, like, I'm never going to outgrow, my place here at Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how long I get sober or how many sponsees I have or committees I've spoken on or anything like that, I will never be greater than member. And I need the people in this room and the people in all the rooms across the nation as much today, if not more, than I ever have. And I don't ever want to forget that. When I did it again. So, I rebounded from that and I walked through it. And we really went back to the basics of praying and doing the next right thing. And those are the times in our recovery that are the toughest, where you don't see this light at the end of the tunnel. See, living life on life's terms and living in faith and all that is super easy when things are great. Okay? Doing the next right thing. I'm sponsoring guys. I'm on fire. It's awesome. Okay? It is not so awesome doing those things when you're devastated or you're terrified or you're full of anxiety and you can't sleep at night. And I've been there multiple times in my recovery. What it reminds me is that I have a progressive illness. It's not going anywhere. And when I don't work this program, and even sometimes when I do, that life happens. And, I don't just work a program when I think I need to. I don't just work a program when things are seemingly bad. I've got to do this deal one day at a time, always. Because I don't know when life is going to happen. I don't know when those curveballs are coming. One of my favorite lines in the big book, and I don't know word for word, but it's in Bill's story. It says, "For if the alcoholic fails to enlarge his spiritual life through service and self-sacrifice for others, he will not survive the certain trials and low spots which lie ahead." And Bill is a great writer, and he uses his words wisely. And that word "certain" sticks out to me a lot, that things are going to happen. I don't know when they are. Could be tomorrow, could be 6 months from now, but I need to make sure that my program is in place when that happens, because if it's not, I don't know if I'll be here. I've had some close calls in my sobriety through the years, and I got about 7 years sober, and I did it again. I made people my higher power, and I thought that being big man on campus and Alcoholics Anonymous and having lots of sponsees and power and prestige and all these things would keep me sane, and it just didn't work. I had all these outside circumstances again that were going to change my inside, so I could go anywhere and people say, "Oh, is that Kevin? Wow, he's so cool. Wow, so much experience. He got sober so young. How great is that?" And that is all wonderful stuff, but it is not enough to keep an alcoholic like me sober. So I went to my sponsor because I started to realize like things aren't going so well for me. On the outside things look great. Okay. Good job. I had a girlfriend. I had a great car. I had all this wonderful stuff on the outside of me, but inside my soul was starting to tear again because I had no God in my life, man. I learned a valuable lesson. My sponsor taught me, what did you think about the most today? Because that's your higher power. And oftentimes it was me. that I was thinking about all the time, and how was I going to get ahead, and how was I going to somehow, some way manipulate the circumstances outside of me in order to change my insides, because that's really what my ism tries to do. It tries to change things outside so I don't have to worry about what's going on inside. And so I went to him, and we started talking, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I had all this time sober, but once again, just not drinking has no long-term effect on my recovery. I had gone months, probably a year, without really having God in my life. I was going through the motions, and if you would ask me in a meeting, "Oh, higher power, so important, sobriety, all right, 12 steps, thank you, I'll be here." It was all BS, because on the inside, it wasn't really going on. See, living in God's will is an action, too. It's not something you can fake. I can come up here and I could adapt and make it seem like I'm living in God's will and say all this neat stuff about recovery. But at the end of the day, my relationship with God is between me and Him. And if I don't take care of that and I don't nurture that relationship, then it's not going to matter anyway. Because I could be a real big shot, but one day I'm just not going to show up. That pressure will rise so much for an alcoholic like me that eventually I'll just bolt. Maybe I'll come up with a reason. Maybe I won't. Probably this time my ego will be so big I just won't show up again. People go, "Where did that guy go?" Oh, yeah. Because the power of Alcoholics Anonymous, the power of the fellowship is bigger than me. This deal is going to go on whether I'm here or not. And I've got to remember that. When I become bigger than member, when I become bigger than the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, then I'm in trouble. There's no power greater than myself then if that's the deal. And finally, the thing that I want to close with, some of you know this. I was supposed to be married this year. The girl that I was talking about, at 7 years when I had everything and everything was going well. Great girl we met in recovery. We were together a long time. We were supposed to be married this year, and we were engaged, and things were going well seemingly in my life. And she came, and there were signs and things like that as it went along, but it was nothing for me that felt like, "Oh, this is going to end," or "It's not going to be great," or whatever it is. In my mind, I had all these expectations. We're going to get married. I knew what my life was going to look like. And she came to me one day and said, "I'm not ready to do this." And it was devastating, probably the hardest thing I've ever gone through in my recovery. And sitting there, had I not gone through what I went through the year before that, I don't think that I would be here today. You know, that experience taught me about the difference between emotional security and spiritual security. See, emotional security is what we get from relationships and cars and status and prestige. And I'm not saying anything's that wrong or bad. But for an alcoholic like me, I can't rely solely on emotional security in order to keep me sober. And I learned about what it was really like to build a relationship back again with a higher power. So when Kate came to me and said that, I was devastated. You know, shook my whole world up, heartbroken like I'd never, ever imagined. You know, sober, dealing with it. And if it weren't for some really good friends in the program, sponsees, service commitments like this, I wouldn't have made it through it. You know, see, that's what I talk about. Like, I work a program every day because I don't know when the devastating news is coming. I don't know when the family members are going to die or the job losses or any of that stuff is coming. But I need to make sure the program is there when it is. You know, for me at that time, you know, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat. For those of you that have gone through heartbreak, it's not a fun feeling. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And, you know, but as much faith as I could muster was waking up and showing up to work, or waking up and getting phone calls from buddies saying, dude, come to that meeting tonight, you're going to be there? And sobbing on the other end of the line going, absolutely, bro, I'll meet you there. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. I often say this, I was getting a little choked up on the way over here thinking about it. Sometimes you have perspective, is, you know, had I made one less phone call to my sponsor, had I said no to a situation like this, or to picking up cigarette butts, or some other sort of service commitment, had I told one less guy that I'd sponsor him, I really, really don't think that I'd be standing here with this opportunity. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to walk through situations with dignity and grace. When I'm heartbroken, when I'm scared to death, where I don't know where to turn, where I've forgotten who my friends are, where life situations that I am certain are going to go my way all of a sudden fall apart, and I think that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life if only I manage well. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has always been there, though God has always put the right person, place, or thing in my life to help me walk through it, whether that be a newcomer or an old timer or whatever it is. And I don't ever want to forget that. So thank you for your time and your attention.
Our second speaker is Maya from Phoenix. Please help me welcome Maya.
Short. Hi, family. I'm Maya. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Maya. We love you, Maya. Lots and lots and lots.
Oh. Thank you. I love you guys too. When I say hello, family, I mean that in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have found kindred spirits. I have found people like me. And it only took me 27 years to do so, but I did it. Life on life's terms. Thank you, Kevin. That was amazing. Difficult to, you know, follow that up, but I'll do my best. Life on life's terms is not always easy. I can't think of a single quote in any book or any, you know, any saying that I know that ever has said that life is easy. But life is a whole lot better in these rooms. When I was a child, I had a really good childhood. You know, my family exposed me to all kinds of, you know, wonderful things, and I still, you know, I learned how to put on a certain facade, and I learned that very early, and I learned that I didn't just have to I learned how to not use that only for certain situations, but for any situation. And I did that, and I did that very well. When I found drugs and alcohol, when I found drinking, I felt very much like Bill describes in Bill's story. I had finally arrived. I had finally found a place where I didn't have to hide. You know, other people who drank like me, they understood. They got it. I didn't have to put on that facade and just exhaust myself with that. I had a place of rest. But it wasn't true serenity, because I was still fooling myself. There was this great dissatisfaction with anything in my life, with my family, with my friends, with my situation. And it didn't matter how good or bad my situations were, I always wanted something different. That grass is always greener syndrome stuck to me. And I just could not find green pastures anywhere I went. And drinking hid that, at least from me. Didn't hide it from anyone else. But it made it possible for me to not see that. And I was, what I thought was happy for a good long time, for several years, many years, actually. And I ended up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because, like anyone else who is here, it got bad. And then it got worse, and that hiding that I was doing wouldn't suffice any longer. I found that no matter where I ran, I tried geographicals. They didn't work. I'm from Los Angeles. Oh, hey. I'm in Phoenix. I found that, you know, no matter where I went, there I was, you know. And a time came where I couldn't run from myself. I couldn't hide anymore. And I couldn't hide that I'm truly alcoholic. And that was that was frightening for me. That was very frightening. I had friends that would joke about being alcoholic, but I never would. Oh, I'm such an alcoholic. I would never say those words. Because if I had said them, then they would be true. I found that place. I found that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization that we all know. And I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And here, I found a fellowship that understood everything that I had been going through up until that point in my life. And I found a sponsor, and I worked the steps, and this sponsor, I lost her too. I was 5.5 months sober, just finished my steps maybe 10 days before she went out. Her sponsor had relapsed. She relapsed. Many of my sisters in sobriety relapsed. And this is all in like a 2 and 3 week period. So I was rightfully, absolutely terrified that I was next, that it was infectious, and that I would relapse. And I went to women in this program that that I surrounded myself. I didn't just go to them and talk to them, but I surrounded myself with women in this program who I knew had been through similar situations. And lo and behold, I went through that experience, and I found another sponsor who, you know, interestingly enough, had been acting as my sponsor the entire time. Kind of interesting how that happened. She was there. She was just there. She needed to be there, and I needed her to be there. And I like to say this program is magic. This program works magic, with or without me knowing. And we went through the steps a second time. And I was able to find in her the support that I felt I needed at that time. And then she became my higher power. And then I ran into a situation where my higher power was going to move to New York. And once again, I was losing a sponsor. And I, once again, was, you know, absolutely terrified. But at least this time I had, you know, I had a little bit of forethought. You know, I knew about it. And I was able to find another sponsor, and she's, you know, 25 years sober, amazing woman, and I don't anticipate losing her anytime soon, knock on wood. But my point in telling you my sponsorial history is that God puts the right people in my life at the right time. And we have Kevin, you touched on some of our sayings. We have a saying that people come into our life for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. And I hold dear to that saying. I really do, because I need to remember it. Because people very, very easily become my higher power. And I form very deep relationships with the people in my life. And I really liked how Kevin put the difference between emotional security and spiritual security, because I am very, very good at creating that emotional security and still working sometimes on maintaining that spiritual security. I do have outside issues, and a lot of times when I'm not taking care of myself and my outside issues, just the perfect storm can happen, and suddenly I'm thinking of, okay, how can I drink so that none of you all know? How, you know, the who, what, where, when, hows of, you know, exactly how to relapse so that no one knows. And that's a really, really scary place to be, especially when you've been gifted all of these amazing things in sobriety. Yes, things. I said things. Things like a roof over your head. Things like a dog that loves you unconditionally. Things like the relationships that we form in these rooms, upon which I rely. So, you know, fear is a great motivator sometimes. And a lot of times when I'm in fear of losing my sobriety, I go running to these rooms. As a matter of fact, I think that's the only way I've survived those times where I end up planning, how can I do this? Where can I go? What's this going to look like? You know, and we say that we plan our relapses happen long before we ever take a drink. And that's important for me to remember because I've been in that state of mind. But through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've found that I can walk through those times and come out the other end. You know, we have another saying that when we're going through hell, keep going. And that's a really good saying to remember also, because life is not always easy, but it is better in these rooms. I've gone through ups, I've gone through downs. I have lost dear friends in this program, some naturally and some unnaturally, some to drunk drivers, and one to a drunk driver, one to a hideous murder, one to lymphoma, and one to an overdose. And that was just last year. And those are the times when I need this program most. And those are the times when I can walk into these rooms and I can break and I can shatter. And the people in these rooms can help me build myself back up to something that I recognize again. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing that I have not found anywhere else. I can walk through my fiancé's 9-month deployment, but I also get to welcome him home. I can, you know, walk through those deaths of dear friends, but I can also remember what they've taught me. One died with something like 14 or 15 years sober and was an integral part in my early sobriety. Life is sort of a mixed bag. You know, it's like M&Ms. Anybody have favorite color M&Ms? I like my blue M&Ms. Right? Not every M&M is blue, but, you know, they're all enjoyable. That's just kind of how I see things. And if I can remember that life is a balancing act, and that in every good there needs to be some kernel of negativity, and in every negative there needs to be some good. I remember that you know, this too shall pass. Whatever it is that I'm going through, whether it's on the positive end of the spectrum or the negative, you know, and today I can remember that. You know, we say that and I'm not going to get this wording right either. I'm not a big book thumper, but that we lack the discipline to recall with sufficient force the pain of even a week or a month ago. And that's certainly the case when I'm drinking or when it comes to my drinking. And it becomes a little bit harder to remember that when, you know, those rough spots occur. But it becomes easier to remember when I have all of you reminding me. And that's really, you know, what the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. No, it's not all about fellowship, but through the fellowship, I find the other aspects. I find the unity here first, and then I find that I am capable of the recovery. And through recovery, I can be of service to others. Not really sure where I want to end, so I do want to thank you all for being here, because I can't have a meeting without y'all. You can have a meeting without me, but I can't have a meeting without y'all. And I'm really grateful that God has placed every one of you in my life today, and that I made it here today. Still working on that major character defect of being late, but progress, not perfection. And today I progressed today. I will leave you with this, and I've said this before. I have, in the past, wanted to be a good person, but I didn't know how to be. Today, I know that I am a good person, and I strive to be better. And that's all through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's through learning to walk through this life on life's terms with dignity and grace. So with that, I will pass.
Thank you, Maya. I would like to introduce our last panel speaker, Josh from Loveland, Colorado.
Hello, my name is Josh from Alcoholics. I want to move this up.
Hi, Josh! We love you, Josh! Lots and lots and lots! Hey. Oh, bunches!
Thank you for that. That was really aggressive. I'm just going to start by saying, what time is this over?
Two?
Okay. I can go for a long time. So buckle down. But seriously, I've had the worst 2 years of my life, actually, the last 2 years. And I actually was like trying to decide if I wanted to tell you the real story or the kind of not so real story. And I decided I was going to tell you the real story, but then I just found out they're recording this, so. Oops. That's when you want to do your research before you make decisions. Also, too, I'm going to do a lot of stuff with my hands. My dad's from the East Coast, and I was raised with, like, East Coast, like, you talk like this, you know? And so the people that listen to this on the tape will not get the full experience. Because I'm going to, like, tell a joke, and like the punchline is, like, you know, that or something. And they'll be like, what happened? You know, we don't know. Anyway, also, too, I'm going to get a lot of Halls, because this talk is sponsored by Halls. Actually, my throat just hurts, but also they did pay me to say that. Really quick, before I get started, I wanted to say I was from, like, some weird place so that he wouldn't be able to say it. He'd be like, this is Josh from a place, you know. Anyway, like I said, my dad's from Brooklyn, New York. He's German, first generation, so basically the only reason I'm telling you that is just I was raised in, like, a really aggressive type, like, going, like, you know, if you want something, you'll take it, you know what I mean? My grandfather came over on a boat through Ellis Island, and actually he's my great-grandfather, but he brought my grandmother with him, but that's a different story. But they came over, and he was, like, a stockbroker, so he, like, you know, he, like, passed down lessons to my dad of being, like, you know, you just go take something. You know, you want something, you go get it. And that's just kind of like how I lived my life or whatever. And so when I got sober, it was really difficult for me to be like, yo, I'm powerless. I was like, no, I'm not powerless. You know, the problem is that, like, you know, like, the cops are always arresting me or whatever. And, you know, and so powerlessness was, like, the hardest thing. And it's ironic because that's really the only step you have to do perfectly. You know, the rest of it, you can kind of screw up. You know, you can do a four-step again. You can do everything again. But if you can't admit that you're powerless, you really don't have a future in Alcoholics Anonymous, unfortunately. Which is kind of like the downside of the program, really. Because, honestly, you think you're powerlessness, and then you, like, you know, like, all kinds of stuff will happen to you. You, like, try to manifest your will in certain situations, something like that, and it doesn't work out. And you're going, why? And it's like, because you're powerless, dude. You know? And I also want to say, too, that my friends were also in that meeting. And actually, a really, really good friend of mine, who, like, you know, that I've known since I was 16. We got sober together in rehab. He stayed sober. I didn't. And so you guys are missing out because you went to this one, is what I'm trying to say. Anyway. Sorry, I'm just trying to gather my thoughts. Dude, speaking, no, 101, if you ever have to talk and you don't know what to say, you just take a drink of water and they're like, he's drinking, but really, like, what am I going to say? I don't know. the people listening will be like, what just happened? What did he do? Anyway, so I got sober. You know, I'm not going to really go into all that. You know, I got sober, blah, blah, whatever. And, you know, I was, like, kind of, like, on top of, you know, cloud nine, really. I was, like, you know, like, I'm an entrepreneur, which is, like, a really catchy way of saying that you're unemployed. And I was, like, you know, trying to start all these companies, doing stuff, and, you know, I had a couple of successes, not really so much. I had this one business that was, like, really seemed like it was a really good idea. It was amping up. It was, like, really just generating sales leads or whatever, but it wasn't really that cool. I mean, it sounded way cooler than it was. It was basically, like, as cool as an iPhone. That's what we're doing. Not really, but I won't tell that joke ever again. That was just like... And anyway, so I, like, at this point, this is, like, probably about roughly 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I had, like, roughly seven years sober. And I was, like, you know, loving life, you know, I'm, like, you know, do whatever I want. I'm, like, kicking doors in, you know what I mean? I'm, like, you know, do whatever I want. I'm traveling all over the world. I went to, like, Africa, all over Europe, whatever, you know? And I was just, like, loving it, you know? Living life. Well, it was awesome. And I, like, started, like, noticing that I was, like, getting sick. You know, not the kind of, like, normal sick. Like, you're just, like, you know, like, you know, having, like, stomach pains and, like, just weird stuff like that that you wouldn't, like, I'm not, like, you know, sick like I have a sore throat, you know? And so, you know, that stuff like that was happening. Like, I would just notice it, like, I would, like, cough up blood or, like, stuff like that. And stuff like that would happen for roughly about 3 months before I was finally, like, okay, there's something wrong with me. Which is, like, kind of funny, actually, I guess. Not really. Those people are laughing. Well, that's rude. I'm sick. And so I go to the doctor, and he was like, dude, I hate to tell you this, but he diagnosed me with, like, this really hardcore, like, hereditary autoimmune disease. It's like you can't catch or anything like that. And it's just like, you know, it's just like being shot out of the sky, you know. You're just like, life's awesome. Then, like, oh, my God, I have this problem. And at first he's like, take these pills and you'll be fine. And I was like, sweet, I'm used to that. And so, you know, and that worked, whatever, at first. And I was like, this is awesome. And I'm like, you know, it was like, he summed it up. The thesis of my entire life has really been on page, like, a lot of people like to bring the big book with them. I just like to make the page number up. So I'd say it's on page 61. It says, you know, they can wrestle. Actually, it is on 59. You can wrestle. Like, the alcoholic tries to wrestle satisfaction, happiness out of the world only if he manages well. That's, like, my life. I mean, except for, instead of managing well, I'd be, like, forcing well. You know, if I could just make this happen, if I could just get this next thing, if I could just get that, if I could just get here, if I could just do that, you know, I'd be, like, on this spiritual plane of, you know, amazingness. And, like, that never happens. You know, that never has happened for me. I've never reached that place, you know? And so I'm like sick and I'm like taking these pills, whatever, and it's working, it's awesome and life's good. And I was like amping up this project and it was like this really cool company. I was really excited about it. I was going to be like, you know, I was like working at this really crappy sales job and I like quit this job and had a bunch of money in my pocket. I was like, here we go. You know, I'm like opening the door to my destiny. You know, not really, but that's how it felt, you know? And then I just got like crazy sick out of nowhere. Like I couldn't get out of bed. And I was like, oh my God, this is not good, right? And so I called the doctor and he put me on like this like extremely high dose of steroids. And I don't know if you've ever taken steroids, but it will really, dude, roid rage is a real thing. Let's just talk about that for a minute. Like, you want to talk about like being serenity? I'd be in meetings and people would be talking and they'd be like, all my problems today are, you know, nothing, and my life is awesome. And I'd be sitting in the back just being like, me too, you know. I have no problems. But seriously, I'd be in meetings, and it would really frustrate me. People would be like, all my problems are luxury problems today. I'd just be like, well, actually, I'm dying, so my problems are not luxury problems. And I didn't tell anybody. I told nobody. I mean, zero people. And I don't know why. I just really didn't have a platform or a situation where I felt like I could expose that type of situation, you know, that type of stuff. It's just like, it wasn't like I was a, you know, really secretive person or anything like that. But I just didn't tell anybody. Nobody knew. And I was just like struggling with this secret. And you know, that progressed, and I got worse and worse and worse. And it got to the point where they wanted to give me lots of pain meds, and you know, obviously, drugs and alcohol don't really work for me. So, and so you know, I resisted that at first, and I was like, you know, I don't want to do it. And he said, well, you could try, you know, it's just really hot water, might, like relax your whole body. So I would just like, at this point, I was like living with my parents. I had like no, I couldn't do anything besides like watch Netflix. Like they have nothing to offer. What does it do with Netflix? Like what are they doing as a business? Just like on the sidebar, they need to like figure it out because they suck. I'm just like, you know, basically just like living the dream, like sleeping in my parents' basement, watching Netflix, and like sitting in the hot tub all the time, and like dying of pain. And this one time in particular, my parents had gotten it. My whole family's an A. Let me just say this real quick, that like, I know this is being recorded, but like, my whole family's an A, so I'm going to tell you guys some things that I haven't told them yet, so don't, you can't like, you know, I don't know if you've ever, I don't know anyone in this room, so I think it's unlikely, but don't say anything I say. Ever. I'm laying in this hot tub one night or whatever, my parents' house, and my parents had gone on like some AA jamboree or something, I don't know, and they were gone for like the weekend. And I was like laying in the hot tub and it was like really hot, and my parents live on a lake and it like causes the wind to like blow sideways, and so when it rains or anything, there's like sideways rain. And I was like sitting in this hot tub and it's like sideways rain and leaves are falling and it's just like, looks like a scary movie. I'm just laying there like killed over. I'm just like so much pain. And I was just thinking like, you know, like this could be it. You know, like this might be the moment that I'm just like going to die in this hot tub right now. And it was an intense, obviously intense. No, it wasn't. It just blew right over. But it was really intense. But I thought about like my life and the, you know, and how it had to transform. And I was thinking, the only thing that I have to regret is I don't have any children. You know, like I've done everything I wanted to do. You know, for the most part. You know, I've never been like a billionaire, but like still working on it. You know, but like seriously, I've done tons of things. You know, I've done like almost everything I wanted to do, and. The only thing I would regret is like I have no offspring because I've always wanted to have kids. And I was dating this really cool girl, and without her I don't know where I would be. She like seriously was by me the whole time. Like 2 months after that, she comes up to me and she's like, I'm pregnant. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like how amazing is this, you know, like I've like check off, you know, everything, like I've done it. And just for the sake of time, I'm going to fast forward a little bit. Like sorry. people were like, what is he doing? We lost that child. And for the first time in recovery, I was like, there's no one out there that could say this is not a good enough reason for me to put a needle in my arm or take a drink. And for like the next like 2 months, I like just hated God. Hated. And I would walk around the bars in the town I live in at night, and I would just look for someone trying to like beat somebody up or trying to rape somebody, and I would think to myself, I'm going to jump in there, and I'm going to save that person, and in the rustle, they're going to stab me and I'll die like a hero. You know, like that's how I'm going to kill myself. And just because in there no one would be like, oh my God, he killed himself, that's so tragic. And I like seriously was like, there's no way, you know, I cannot go on living, you know, I just can't do it. And my health had like kept like digressing and kept getting worse and worse and worse, and they had to do multiple surgeries on me towards the end, and that was like last May. And I still was kind of like, fuck you, God, but I was like coming out of that. I apologize for cussing there, but... And I was like slowly coming out of that. And this whole time, you know, this whole time I'd been like, you know, sober for multiple years, done all kinds of things, and I'd always be like, the whole time I'd be like, God is going to show up here, you know? Like, I'm going to like turn the corner and boom. It seemed like, there he is, you know? And it was just like, that just never happened. It was like, he just never came. You know, just like never showed up. And I would just like think to myself at night, I would just be like, dude, you know, you coward. You know, and I'd have like arguments with God. I'd be like, you're such a coward, you know? Like, here I am doing all the things you want me to do. And like, in the one moment I need you to come through for me, you just don't. And, you know, it was really, really, really frustrating. You know, it was like more frustrating than anything I can possibly like even explain. And, so anyway, I'm still with this girl and, you know, God bless her, and you know, I'm like having these surgeries, and I'm just trying to like make it through like the day, you know, and that's like my goal each day. I'm gonna make it through this day, and you know, I started to feel better. They gave me like 2 surgeries. Last one was like August 5th, and they're doing like all kinds of crazy stuff, and I start to like kind of come out of it, you know. And at this point I like rebound. I'm like, okay, you know what, God, I forgive you, you know, or like whatever. I'm not like blaming him anymore. I'm just like kind of back in the groove of like spirituality-ness, you know. And you know, I'm starting to try to like maybe do some kind of business thing or something, just like getting back to life, you know. And she comes up to me, or we're hanging out one night, whatever. I live with her, so we always hang out. But one night in particular, we're hanging out, and she's like, I need to tell you something. And we had named our son's name was going to be Alex, because for after Alexander the Great, or Alex, we were going to call him Alexander. And she like was like talking to me about that, whatever, and she's like, I need to tell you something. And she was like, I'm pregnant. And I actually just found this is like 3 weeks ago. And you know, it's just like the gifts of this program. And see, I don't really know how to articulate this. So I'm just like gather my thoughts for a second. People will be like, "What did he do? What did he just do?" You know, it's like. And just to like reiterate, like the I always wanted God to do this. Like throughout the whole experience, I was like, God, you show up this way, you know? And I was like looking for him to come there. Who knows like what he was doing in the background, you know? And I'd be like, you know, God, I really need you to like, you know, do this or do that. I want you to come here. Like I pray for that. I do this exact thing, you know? And it was like, in this program and in life, like A does not always get B. You know, and you have to like kind of almost like he, I don't remember which one of them said it, but one of them said like adapt. It's like adapting, but it's also like, I mean, if you want to pray and you want to really have a spiritual relationship, it's not like your friend. You know, you're not like hanging out with your buddy and you're like, hey, let's go get some food at Chipotle right now. And he's like, no, I don't really want Chipotle. Like, yes, you do. You want Chipotle. You know? Like, if you think about just like that type of relationship and how that situation would, you know, play out, it's like you can't have a spiritual relationship that way. It's not going to work out, you know. Especially if you think like ontologically, God's obviously more powerful than I am. You know, he's not like on his knees at night, like going, Josh, I really would like it if you would give me a Maserati. You know? Like that doesn't happen. You know, and so yeah. You know, it's obviously the other way around. So I can't like pray for God. And I can't be like, I need you to do this exact thing. You know, because I have no idea how he's going to come through. I have no idea how this is going to work out. You know, and that was obviously a really big pill for me as well. And people always speak, and they always talk about like the. I was supposed to say this in the beginning. I forgot. Sorry. People always speak, and they like talk about like they always talk from like 2 years past. You know, and like that was like the last 2 years. You know, and they usually like start from 2 years before that. And so I'm like still in the middle of this, you know what I mean? This is life in terms for me today. You know what I mean? I'm like still recovering from surgery. I like still have like some huge scars on my stomach, you know, and I'm like still like, the doctor hasn't even cleared me to be able to like go and do stuff really. And so don't tell him here. But like, he actually called me when we were on the plane or when we were like about to take off and he was like, what's that sound? I was like, what do you mean? What's that? He's like, it sounds really loud where you are. No, it's just a bad connection. Anyway, my point is this, is that, I mean, the only thing you have to do is, like, keep doing it. You know, there's like people, like, you know, people come to this program, they're like, wow, that person should get sober, they really need it. You know, like, really needing it and really wanting it is not going to get it. You know, you're not going to get anywhere with that. You know, the only thing you have to do is do it. I mean, who cares if you want to do it? Even in the second step, it even says that. It says word for word. It says you don't even have to have a spiritual connection. All you have to do is be willing to have one. I mean, that's it. And it's all about doing, you know, do. Just like keep doing it, you know. And the whole time I was like, you know, trying to like, you know, fight my way to death or whatever. Which is just so weird. I mean, that's weird. Anyway, I was like talking to my sponsor about it. I mean, I tell him all the time. He's like, you know, he'd be like, it's probably a good idea that you stop doing that. And I would be like, you know what, Duke? I don't care, Duke. And I would call him by his name just because to emphasize, you know. Anyway, you know, I'm just really grateful that I'm not one of those empty seats because I've known plenty of people that should be here and they're not. You know, and people always talk about my bottom was this, my bottom was that, and really it doesn't matter for me because I'll tell you right now that the worst days of my life have been in my recovery. You know, you talk about like living in a crack house and being totally crazy. I mean, I'd take that over what just happened to me. You know, and like honest to God, you know, like for me, it's almost more about, it's not even about being sober anymore. It's become more than that. You know, it's just, it's like how life can, like, how good can my life be, or how, like, you know, it's like, we get a gift just because our lives have been so bad that you can go to the inverse of that. You know, there really is no happy without sad. So, like, you know, now that I've had that terrible thing happen to me, who knows what's going to happen, you know, or how that's going to be used in my life, you know. But I'm just really grateful that there's somehow I did not get loaded during that. I have no idea. That was, like, the grace of God. And the whole time, sorry, I'm going to get a little emotional here, but the whole time I'd be like, Where the hell, when are you going to show up? You know, looking back on it, it's like, I mean, I wanted to drink so bad, I would like, you know, I was like Facebook stalking alcohol, you know? It would be like, you know, just like totally out of control, but somehow I just did not, you know? And you want to talk about, like, you can't explain how something didn't happen or did, that's the grace of God right there. You don't have to do anything to earn it, you know? You just get it. But I don't really have any of those cool things that people say, like they close with, like, the coolest thing you ever heard that rhymes. I don't have that. So I'm just going to end with saying that I'm just really grateful that you guys chose to come to this one, not that one, for whatever reason. And, the time is it. Yeah, I guess that's all I got. Thank you.
That was awesome. I really want to thank our panel members, Josh, Kevin, and Maya, for speaking once again. And we're going to close this meeting with the responsibility pledge.
A small circle, big circle, we'll make it happen. It's okay. As long as we all connect, it's going to be.